final round of the MotoGP World Championship in the Mediterranean sunshine is underway.
And Lorenzo got a dream start from pole.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 516 for Wednesday, the 16th of November, 2016. There's a nice little set of 16s in there. I like the symmetry on it. 516 for the 16th of November, 2016. It's got a kind of ring to it. I'm Dave Neal, up on the banks of the River Trent on the border of Nottinghamshire and Lincolnshire in the UK. And joining me this week, down in the M4 corridor, we have the ever busy Harry Lloyd. Harry, how are you?
Yes, not too bad. It's been a hectic time in motorcycling. Obviously, we have had, you know, the last race of the season, and then also if you're more into the production and or riding of motorcycles, then we've had Intermot Eikema, and now for all our British listeners, Motorcycle Live is coming up. So yes, currently a wee bit busy. But,
busy,
you know,
times ahead. So two trips to Valencia and 9 days at the bike show. So what is like, what's it like to have a proper job?
It's pretty intense. So I was obviously out in Valencia last week. Didn't get to stay for the test, but we'll still be talking a lot about the test. Then fly back to Valencia for the Sev round this weekend. Everyone be sure to watch that because it is the last round of the year and sort of, you know, other than Macau, the last really big motorcycle race, if you want to call the Sev big. And then I'll be up at the bike show. So if any Motopod fans do come there, then do swing by the BMW stand. I'll be there on official BMW business. So unfortunately, I can't hand out any stickers like when Dave and I went to the London bike show. But I'm more than happy to have a chat because it means that I won't have to talk about GSs with rich middle-aged men.
Oh, let's hope the bosses don't listen to this show too often.
Hopefully
or too
not.
Closely.
BMW do have a wide range of other motorcycles for all sorts of demographics. The R9T Racer looks lovely.
Yeah, the other models are available.
Exactly.
And, you know, obviously it's not just all about the S1000RR either. It's all good. But I tell you what, that's a beautiful looking machine now, isn't it? All BMW smoke blowing aside, I do have a penchant for the... for the S1000RR, even though Josh wasn't particularly enamored with it. Was some can ride it, some can't. Some gel with it, some don't. Unfortunately, Josh didn't gel with it this year. But while we're on about the BMW S1000RR and on the stock side of things, and when we come to news and bits and pieces, that could be an interesting championship next season. We haven't discussed this pre-show.
No, we haven't.
I had a conversation today of some of the guys that are going to be in that, but we'll come on to that as we get to bits of news and bits and pieces. Unfortunately, with everybody being spread far and wide and work commitments and everything else and domestic arrangements in my case, no interviews this week, unfortunately. We've had a good batch over the past couple of weeks. Martin did an outstanding job out in the desert. Thank you again to Martin for his efforts out there with World Superbike and to all the guys that joined us and those that wrote in and said thank you in turn. What we still do is we have to thank the donators and subscribers. We haven't had a chance to compile the list this week.
They'll be inserted here right about now.
Big thanks to James Di Pretoro and Marty Parker, who continue their support of the show with recurring donations. This was recorded on a bus ride to work by tethering my phone to my laptop and then recording a free online translator. How crazy is the future?
So thank you to those guys that have subscribed and donated. If you want to subscribe or donate to the show, go to www.motopodcast.com, left-hand side, a little bit about halfway down, two yellow boxes. One says subscribe, one says donate. Entirely up to you. We appreciate everything that comes into the show. It helps us with feed subscriptions. It helps with hosting. It helps with Martin and I going into the races. And it just helps with the whole running of the show. So if it's $5, $10, however much you can pass on. We understand Christmas is coming and it's not the easiest time of year, especially for those of us with children and or dependents. So, always welcome. So if there's anything that you can spare, we would be gratefully received just to help the show come trucking along.
Yep, exactly. A big thank you to everyone who has donated in the past, and a big thank you to everybody who will donate And also a big thank you to everybody who listens, because, you know, at the end of the day, if nobody listened, this show would probably be a very, very different thing. But luckily,
this show would be a conversation on WhatsApp.
Yes, it would. It would, certainly. This conversation, it's more than just you and I, Dave, because, of course, we do have listener feedback.
Indeed,
the email address for that is motopod@motopodcast.com. We have had a fair few listener emails come in, especially about off-season shows, but we'll sort of keep them a bit more specific and related to Valencia and testing. So the main email we got through on this subject matter was from a long-time listener and familiar name, Grant Hefferman. So he basically goes on to say, "I must have missed a trick. Why does the 2017 Ducati, or at least the all-black Ducati with no livery that Nick Harris keeps telling me is a 2017 Ducati, have wings on it?" So I'm pretty sure that Ducati was the 2017 Ducati, at least certainly in the case of Andrea Dovizioso. Obviously, both of Jorge Lorenzo's Ducatis at the test were black due to, you know, obviously contract reasons and the like. Jorge Lorenzo did do a couple of laps on the 2017 bike. I think most of his time was spent on the 2016 bike, however. But the idea of keeping the wings on there is that's one less variable. So, you know, the 2017 bike has a revised frame and a revised engine.
Yeah.
And so for the purpose of this conversation, we'll only be talking about Andrea Dovizioso, because obviously Jorge Lorenzo is learning everything. But by keeping the winglets on there, that's one less thing that's changing on the bike. So sure, they won't be using winglets next year because they're banned. Rumor has it Ducati are working on some alternative aero devices which could pass the rules, but we have to wait to see about those. But yeah, the idea is that by keeping the winglets there, you're controlling the number of variables. So now you can tell that, okay, it's definitely the chassis that's making these differences, because, you know, the winglets and everything else is set up the same, and vice versa for the engine. So by keeping the winglets there, they're sort of just keeping it more controlled to, in theory, have a better gauge of what works and what doesn't. I think that all of the teams, and especially Ducati, have a pretty good gauge on how the winglets affect the motorcycle. And they probably have a better gauge on how having winglets or not having winglets will change the bike than a new frame or a new engine. So it's quite easy for them to, you know, to look at the data and say, okay, well, we have this with winglets, it'll probably be like this, so it'll probably be okay.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's the old Honda way of doing things. It's step by step. If you change too many things at one time, you don't know what's made the difference.
Yeah.
And also, when you're looking at the new, the 2017 bike's going to have a revised engine, as you say, revised chassis, other components on it, you're not going to know. If you take the winglets off as well, it'll turn sharper as well, which again adds an extra variable that wasn't there this season. So yeah, in theory, the easiest thing to do is keep the winglets on it. Again, if it's engine pickup, things like that, they can test them back to back with what they've used this year. Like I say, obviously for Jorge Lorenzo, it's a different story coming from the Yamaha to the Ducati. Mm. But for Dovi, who's been on it all year, and, you know, they've won races on it this year with Andrea Iannone, and Dovi's been there or thereabouts most of the year
He won a race as well in Sepang.
Exactly. Yeah, he did. He won a race in Sepang as well. So the bike is competitive now. It is a front-running machine. It's not one of those with the concessions that we've seen in the past years where you say, well, okay, if you do this, we'll give you that, and then you lose this and the fuel capacity and the number of engines, etc. It is now a fully fledged factory machine, and it has proved itself as a fully fledged factory machine. So the variables and the changes that are made for 2017 will now come forward. Like I say, the aero side of things, they kind of know what they're going to do with that. And again, if the ECU is developed a little more over the winter, that may come into play a little bit as well, because if they're taking the winglets off all of the bikes, banned altogether, then there has to be some step forward with the electronics, with the ECU and the anti-wheelie, to prevent the front wheel going light, which is pretty much in its entirety what the winglets are for.
Yeah, I mean,
Under braking as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no. The removal of winglets should help the bike to turn quicker, as you say, and yeah, it in theory will make the bike a bit less stable. You know, Danny Pedrosa, that's one of the reasons that you hardly ever saw Danny Pedrosa with winglets, is that because of his size, you know, pulling the bike from one side to the other is one of the hardest things that he has to do on a MotoGP bike.
He hasn't got the leverage in his limbs, has he? Because they're obviously, God bless him, because of his stature, they're shorter leverage than almost every other rider.
Yeah, exactly. And so by having winglets on the bike, that made the bike, you know, more stable in a straight line, but also harder to flick over. So that's why you'd never see Danny Pedrosa or very rarely saw him with those winglets. So, yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I don't think that the Ducati is suddenly going to lose, you know, half a second in terms of lap time by having those winglets removed.
No.
But, of course, you know, some things will change. But fortunately, there is still a fair bit of testing to be done, and Ducati definitely have the budget and the resources with riders like Casey Stoner and Michele Pirro to use up the rest of their testing days. And we'll get to testing in more detail in a bit, but I'm pretty confident that Ducati will make it happen.
I think they're going to hit the ground. It's 2017, best season ever in the offing already, I think.
I think so, certainly. But before we talk about MotoGP testing, as Indeed. You alluded to a bit earlier, Dave, there has been a fair bit of breaking news, especially in the BSB paddock. Actually, we've had a couple of signings in the World Superbike and World Supersport paddock. Gino Rea is going to go 11 Kawasaki. Xavier Forez is staying with Barney Ducati. And, you know, just a couple of things like that. No huge surprises there. But as you're saying, lots of these BSB signings are quite interesting.
Yeah. The one of the major signings that we've had that was announced last week is Leon Haslam to Bournemouth Kawasaki. Forgive me, did you cover that last week?
I don't think so.
No, Leon Haslam, he's with Pete Extensa's team now with Bournemouth Kawasaki. They were formerly Quattro Plant Kawasaki this season. Quattro Plant, the sponsorship has since moved to FS3, the Nigel Snoop team that ran Billy McConnell last season that will run Billy McConnell next season, along with James Rispoli in Stock 1000. Mm-hmm. The JG Speedfit sponsorship that was part of the GB Moto setup, I believe, will go to Bournemouth Kawasaki, along okay. with the Team Green Kawasaki factory backing.
Okay.
So we have Leon Haslam, we have Luke Mossy for BSB. It's not looking likely that Andy Reid's going to be on the Supersport bike. I think they're concentrating mainly on the BSB Championship, but James Hillier has been retained for the Northwest 200 TT and the Rhodes, as is the norm for Bournemouth Kawasaki mm-hmm. and James as it goes. As we said, FS3, they've retained the services of Billy McConnell and brought in James Rispoli to launch an assault on the Stock 1000 Championship. Sort of rumours sort of knocking about today that Danny Buchan will return to Stock 1000 along with potentially Andy Reid. That could be his destination.
Wasn't Reid meant to go to Stock 1000 a couple of years ago?
He was a couple of years ago. That was part of the deal because Sean Muir Racing basically look after Andy Reid and his interests. And there was an agreement in place a couple of years ago that he would at some point end up on a Milwaukee-backed Stock 1000 bike. If you remember, he did run
Sunflower Cup or something, wasn't it?
Exactly right. At the end of season Sunflower a couple of years back, he ran the Milwaukee Yamaha Superbike as a well done for running in, I think it was Stock 6 that year that he was in. And they gave him a run out on that, which was, you know, he did some fast laps, but ultimately was unsuccessful in the race as he crashed out. Uninjured, thankfully. But yeah, there was talk of him doing that, but then things changed and SMR went to World Superbikes. And I think Andy he's sort of in the wilderness a little bit, to the point where what are SMR going to do and what are Milwaukee doing as personal sponsors. So it'll be interesting to see that Andy will end up at some point in Stock 1000. I think it will be next season. Potentially, I hear, with Morello Racing. It's all yet to be confirmed. This is all hearsay. There's nothing in writing as yet. But with Rispoli in there, with Taylor McKenzie on the Suzuki, I suspect with... Well, if we go take it back one step, Martin Halsall of Halsall Racing, Bennett's Suzuki from last season, Martin has pulled the plug on his BSB team. He may well end up doing the roads. If you read through social media, the potential of doing the roads with Lee Johnston or somebody like that, again, it's the rumor mill. There's an awful lot going on behind the scenes at BSB Roads everywhere at the moment with sponsors and teams and everything else. It's a very, very strange, silly season for BSB and the off season.
Yeah, and we got a couple of emails through about the BSB team situation, which you actually had a very good reply to, but I think we'll save that for a bit more of an off season show to sort of go into a bit more depth on it and drill down a bit.
Absolutely. Big thanks to Peter Newell for that. A regular listener to the show and a regular contributor to the emails. Always worth a read. When he has, he did apologise. It didn't actually go on a bit, but he kind of said it did, and he'd been on the coffee. But no, it was an excellent length email. It was well worth reading, and hopefully the reply did it justice. Martin's kind of disillusioned with BSB and the money side of things. I don't know if you followed the thread on Twitter. One of the MCN journos, Simon Patterson, he's the MotoGP reporter. He basically was tweeting about racing and it being a business, and there should be racing for points, not to make money, and basically it's intimating towards that side of things. Kind of, it set off a bit of a thread of discussion when Colin Wright joined in, the former GSE.
Colin Wright, excellent follow. If I can get my words out,
there we go. Yeah, Colin Wright. He's relatively new to Twitter over the last sort of 12 months or so, but the former Airwaves Yamaha boss, very successful. They ran in World Superbikes. They were multiple British champions with Troy Bayliss, Neil Hodgson, and Leon Camier. To name but three, they all chipped in, and it's interesting about how BSB kind of works with the moving around of the sponsors. Whether obviously the series organisers are making quite a lot of money. There's an awful lot of bums on seats. They do. I'm not pointing the finger at the hierarchy to say they do this. I don't know enough about the behind the scenes side of things to make an opinion on that without getting shot down by various people who listen to the show. So I'm not pointing the finger at the organizers, MSV, anything in that sense. Martin's point of view was, why shouldn't we make money? And it was something that Sean Muir came up with a couple of years ago. Somebody said to him, how do you make a small fortune out of racing? And he said, start with a big one. And that's been basically indicative of the years gone by. Businessmen that own the teams, your Sean Muir, your Mark Smith Halverson, your Martin Halsall, who've got the money to put into the teams, aren't seeing a big return for their investment. Sure, it's not a business that's going to make a massive amount of money, but Martin's point was, we really need to close the gap. Yeah. His outlay to what the return is, there's too much of a gap. And, apart from Paul Bird, who doesn't obviously advertise his business on there, it's a different setup for Birdie against Martin and Sean, and Daryl Healy, of course, who Colin Wright was the team manager for at Groundworks Southeast. So the thread through that was very interesting. The crux of it was that Martin's given his notice to BSB. He won't be running in BSB next season. So the Suzuki contract, the factory contract, was up for grabs, and that's been taken on by Hawk Racing, what were build-based BMW from last season, the season before, running Richard Cooper and young Lee Jackson.
Yeah.
So they will be taking on, they will become, Hawk Racing will be factory Suzuki. Whether Bennett's sponsorship follows, I don't know.
I believe it will. I'd heard it will. But that's okay.
No, that's fine. You hear a little bit more in the industry side of things than I do. So, potentially they will follow. So Bennett Suzuki will be basically run by Hawk Racing rather than by Halsall Racing for next season. Taylor McKenzie confirmed as a rider. They've not said where, but I would be surprised if they put him into BSB. I think he will stay in Stock 1000 and defend his title.
Certainly his last foray into the premier class didn't go great. Sure, the WD-40 team is probably not on the same level as a team as Hawk Racing, but with a brand new Suzuki, that this will be its first year racing in any championship.
Inexperienced rider in of a superbike.
Yeah, you're probably going to want some guys who are a bit steadier and a bit more knowledgeable to help develop that bike, at least for one of the rides. I don't know. Maybe you do want someone who's just young and dumb for the second seat. No offense to McKenzie, just a saying.
Yeah, I don't know who the riders are going to be for that. Again, there's potential hearsay that the World Superbike rider, his name has been thrown into the frame quite regularly because he only lives sort of 10 minutes from Mallory Park, which is Sylvain Guintoli. That he looks the hot favorite to end up there, but again, we'll have to remain to be seen. We could end up being wrong, but again, you know how it works with BSB. Some things move around and things change. So we can only work on what we read and what we look into. So don't hold us. If it's wrong, don't hold us to it. We're not saying this is gospel. this is just a hypothesis in the main.
I think the theme for this show overall should be don't hold us to any of this. It's all hypothesis.
Harry and Dave's hypothesis show. Next, I'm going to get shut down and say, you said. I'm sure that there's a point that we'll get that if we're wrong on something, then the eminent MCN BSB journalist Ollie Rushby, he'll drop us a line to let us know that we're wrong. Oh, hey Ollie, hope you enjoyed your little scooter trip.
He didn't listen to the show where we applauded him. Everybody who
did he not?
No, everybody
did
who
he listened to the one where we gave him a bit of stick.
Exactly. Every Motopod listener out there who started following Ollie Rushby because we recommended him so highly, please tweet him and say something a bit nasty to him, and then follow it with @Motopod so he knows what we have done for him, everybody. And no doubt he'll listen to this show as well.
And also, well, I'll tell you what, if we say something slightly sideways about the MCN sport, I'm just wondering how many exclamation marks are left in this world, because every time they tweet, it ends in an exclamation mark.
Yes, it is very exciting, very exciting. Oh, to be fair, MCN Sport is a very, very good magazine. MCN Sport is the quarterly magazine we're discussing here.
Is it out this week, isn't it? Next week?
Yes, it is next week. I'm hoping that there will be some free ones at Motorcycle Live. If not, I will have to make a late night trip to Smith's to pick up one, because it is one of the few magazines that I still buy.
With the greatest of respect, your boss is ex-MCN, is he not? So can he not get a hold of a couple and slip one onto your desk or something?
Well, that's what I'm hoping. I haven't
would be nice. That would be nice.
Topic with him yet.
You should. It's only, you know, it's a fiver. It's nothing to him. Exactly. But yeah, that's a great magazine to read. The articles Matt Oxley does, and I know there's Ollie's got one in there after he spent a bit of time with Shaky out in Spain, and the photographer for MCN, Joe Dick. So,
and I think it's now available for international audiences as well. So I think it's Simon Patterson, who we mentioned earlier. If you go into his Twitter, at Denkmit, I'm pretty sure he posted a link to how international people can get it. So, you know, if you're listening out there in America, then you can. It's probably just a digital version, but, you know, you can still get a hold of that.
But Motopod's not affiliated with Motorcycle News in any way. Other motorcycle racing publications are available.
Exactly.
It's just that they've done a pretty good job this weekend.
Yes.
But props to the Crash Boys as well. I'll give props to the Crash Boys after the test, because they've been outstanding this weekend.
Yes, they have. Crash.net forging ahead as ever. Speaking of forging ahead, we should probably start talking about not only do we have three races and, you know, end of season standings to go over, but we also have 2 days of MotoGP testing. I'll say now, there was Moto 2, Moto 3, and World Superbike testing that has gone on as well, but we'll save that for next show because there's just too much to talk about.
Especially if we go off topic and start digressing like we just did. So I should apologize for going down the digression route.
No, it was all good. Hopefully everybody enjoyed it. So now, first of all, straight into the Valencia weekend. It was a pretty standard weekend throughout. No major dramas or surprises ahead of qualifying or the race that I can really recall. Nope. You know, everything just pretty standard end of season. Obviously, all three Tuzs decided, so there was nothing edgy a seat. But it was Aaron Canet who took his first ever pole position in the lightweight class, ahead of Brad Binder and Hiroki Ono, who doesn't have a ride for next year. Hiroki Ono putting it on the front row as well, ahead of Belega, ahead of Guevara, ahead of Nicolò Antonelli. Those were your top six. No huge surprises for anybody else inside that top 16. But then when the race got started, Canet unfortunately stalled it, so his first ever pole position became a first ever start from pit lane, as he was forced off the grid, which was a bit of a disaster for him.
It was a little bit, wasn't it?
Never like to say anything like that, of course. So he did have a very good ride through the field. He eventually finished in 19th place. So, you know, coming from pit lane, in fact, was a pretty solid result for him.
Yeah, when you think of turn one at Valencia, it is a fairly swift turn one. So by the time they're past him and he's allowed to go when the last guy's gone past, they're kind of halfway to turn two before he's even made it round the first corner.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It was a difficult ride for Aaron Canet, but great to see him put it on pole. Obviously, it's his local circuit. He's from Valencia. Local knowledge coming to the fore, but it was great for him and for the EG00 Mark VDS team to get onto pole position.
Yep. It wasn't so great for Francesco Bagnaia, who for the second time in three races got taken out by Gabriel Rodrigo. Rodrigo had a high side in front of him, and then Pecco unfortunately got caught up. That, of course.
Yeah, that's a bit hard. From the Mahindra PR man, that's a little bit hard. Then Rodrigo took him out. The poor guy was 4 foot in the air. It's not like he could do about it.
Yes, that is true. But of course, that did cost Pecco third or a top three finish in the championship. And also, that would have also given him quite a nice monetary bonus. I'm not saying that as sort of to you know, try and pimp Mahindra and get the message out there, but sort of just to show that, you know, even in Moto3, riders are incentivized with, you know, win bonuses and top three results in the championship to get more money. It's not MotoGP level money.
But with the greatest respect, as they should.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
In any race series, that doesn't happen enough in my opinion, whether it's MotoStar, Stock 6, whatever. Through to MotoGP, you know, it's such an expensive sport to take part in. Any kind of recompense, any kind of bonus in an incentive in that sense is more than welcome.
Yep, exactly. No, yep. So for sure. So yeah, a bit disappointing for Pecco. Disappointing lap two for Brad Binder, who dropped down to 22nd place. And then, as we've seen a couple of times now this season, Brad Binder made it look easy and cut through the field to eventually take victory. It was a very hard-fought victory. Him, Juan Mir, and Andrea Migno, they were all fighting, you know, really, really close. And Bastianini was
there. It wasn't like Jerez, was it, where he could bridge the gap, breeze past them, and then nobbed off into the distance. They actually did fight back.
And a couple of penalties as well. You know, Juan Mir had a pretty, I think it was about a 0.6-second lead, but then he got told to drop a position for running off track. So, you know, that kept things interesting. And yeah, you know, as always, Moto3, really, really exciting. Fabio De Giannantonio again towards the front. De Giannantonio, Juan Mir, you know, both those guys, so, so, so impressive in their rookie seasons. With second place, Juan Mir did win the Rookie of the Year award, but watch out for both those guys and of course, Bulega next season. Bulega unfortunately didn't finish in the points. He was coming off a dislocated shoulder in Sepang.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah,
because I didn't see qualifying. I've only seen the highlights of the race because I was at work. The only race I've actually seen was MotoGP. What if Bulega qualified fourth? Why was he?
Because he got given a 12 place grid penalty, I believe it was, for being
slow. He was miles back on looking on the there was some penalties handed out and one or two shuffled back down the grid.
Yes, I believe there were three riders in total. I think Antonelli was another one who got a 12 place grid penalty for basically, you know, being slow on the racing line during qualifying. So you know, race direction, as they said they would have now, you know, turned up the heat with the penalty for dangerous riding during qualifying, as they should. So it's gone from being three places to now 12 places.
So Bulega had a shit first lap then, because he started 16th, but then he was 26th at the end of lap one.
Yes. So
wow. Okay.
Not great for him.
Didn't show up much on the highlights.
Yeah, exactly. So pretty disappointing for him. Both the SEV Moto3 title competitors, Marcos Ramirez and Lorenzo Della Porta, they both crashed out of the race. So those guys will be going in pretty much level footing to this SEV finale. And yeah, you know, the top five were you know, your usual guys. Obviously, Binder's moving up. Juan Mir, Migno. Migno still seems to blow a bit hot and cold. He'll be there next year. Bastianini, he's moving to the Australia Galicia team. De Giannantonio, you know, so many good names to watch there for next year. Jorge Navarro, he finished 9th in his last Moto3 race. Fabio Quartararo, he was 14th. A standout ride that we have to praise is Raul Fernandez, who stepped in to sub for the injured Maria Herrera with the MH6 team. He finished the race in 11th place on his world championship debut, and that bike has barely been able to get into the points all year with Maria Herrera.
What's his background? Have you seen him in? Is he from Sev?
Yes, he's from Sev. Very, very strong rookie season in Sev. He had a couple of tough first races, you know, adjusting his teammates to Lorenzo Della Porta in the Sev with the Leglisse team.
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, now he's challenging for wins basically every race, could potentially take third in the championship in the Sev. He's signed for the Aspar Mahindra team for next year, so, you know, a pretty solid team, much like the Leglisse team. But Raul Fernandez,
well thought of then.
Raul Fernandez is, yeah, a name to watch. He was, you know, competing in the Red Bull Rookies Cup. A couple of, you know, unlucky crashes where there were some other riders involved really cost him that title. But no, Raul Fernandez, that's one to keep an ear open for, definitely.
Excellent. Another name to remember. But yeah, it was, I mean, what a run through from Brad Binder, as we say. He just proves that he's on the roll, isn't he? He's got it. And, you know, from being, where was he? He was 22nd at the end of lap two after he ran wide.
Yeah.
To fight back from that, it was a couple of laps, take a place, Thankfully, on a 24-lap race, he's got time to do it. And Valencia, it's not too bad a track to overtake on, certainly on a Moto3 machine.
Yeah.
And he's smart enough to take his time and step by step. 24 laps is a fairly long way around Valencia. It's a fair number of laps, really. But then for the likes of Mignot and Juan Mir to keep fighting back and showing, you know, you're not going to have this easy, was good to see. And then with the top four finishing, as Binder, Mir, Mignot, Bastianini finishing within 0.14 of each other, it was a fantastic finale to the season and just deserves for what Moto3 has been this year.
Yep, exactly. Next year is going to be absolutely amazing as well. So as we said, the season does conclude. Brad Binder, 319 points. Over 100 points clear of Andrea Bastianini in second. You know, Binder dominated that championship. It's going to be tough to do anything like that in Moto2, especially as a rookie. But given some time, I think Binder will get there. Jorge Navarro, he did eventually secure third with 150 points, less than half the points Brad Binder had. Bagnaia in fourth, 1 point ahead of Juan Mir, who was the rookie of the year, with Dejean Antonio and Nicolò Belega right behind him as well. So, you know, those three rookies are going to be really, really strong, especially when you consider that above Juan Mir, the only rider staying in Moto3 is Andrea Bastianini. So immediately, you know, just based on eliminating riders, those three rookies are straight into title contention, more or less.
Absolutely.
Then Jakob Kornfeld, 8th. Andrea Locatelli, 9th. And Romano Fanardi, 10th overall.
Still 10th.
Yeah, despite not doing, barely doing half a season.
Which is outstanding. For those, for the riders that are staying in Moto3 next season, a word of advice for you boys. You're not going to run away with it like Brad Binder did. Consistency is key.
Yeah,
ride smart, get the finishes, bank the points. There you go, boys. There's your way to do it for next season.
Exactly. Of course, Romano Fanardi will be back next year with the Jetta Rivercold team. Some other notable names, Nicolò Antonelli, who moves to the IO team next year. He was 11th, Fabio Quartararo, 13th overall for him. Kyrill Idan-Pauwi, 19th with only 62 points. Obviously, 50 of those points, coming from his two wet weather wins. John McPhee in 22nd with 48 points. And that's more or less. So here, to put into perspective how good Raul Fernandez's ride was, Raul Fernandez scored 5 points from 11th place. Pretty good.
Yep.
The entire year, Maria Herrera has scored 7 points in total. So really, really good ride from Raul Fernandez on the exact same bike Maria Herrera was on.
That's excellent. That's really good going. I was just going to... Your weekend with Mahindra was... interesting.
Yeah, we should probably mention that.
I think we should mention, well, maybe not mention the WhatsApp conversation we had, because that just really was so quite possibly the most incredible message I've had from you. And mate, just read that again to yourself. But yeah, go ahead, mate. What have you done this week?
Rewinding back to the news, Max Biaggi was proud to announce that he has become a Mahindra ambassador and will start a air quotes factory team with Mahindra Racing in the Italian Championship, with a look at competing in Sev races next year and moving to the World Championship potentially in 2018. So yeah, I basically looked after Max Biaggi the entire weekend.
See, how cool is that?
It was not something I thought I would ever do. And Max Biaggi is actually a lovely person. From what I've heard, he's calmed down a lot since his racing days, and definitely wasn't like that, especially during the 500 era. But now, you know, very, very, very nice guy. You know, he's still a bit of a racer. He's not, you know, completely down to earth with, you know, everything. But no, just, yeah, nice dude.
Excellent. As on behalf of the whole of Motopod, mate, we're proud of you. Look, it's outstanding. You're rubbing shoulder. Well, your elbow to his shoulder. You're rubbing elbows and shoulders with Max Biaggi.
Yep, he was unfortunately late to the grid on Sunday, so he didn't get as many TV interviews as we wanted. But thus is the life.
Can I just say that on the TV cover, he did look a little bit scruffy rather than his usual well-tended facial hair.
Well, for next time he comes out to a race, we'll make sure that he has a shave before.
For somebody who was really meticulous about his appearance previously, looking a little bit grizzled, it was unusual to see.
Okay,
sporting a rather natty Dainese TT t-shirt.
I'll pass the feedback on. But just quickly before we move on to Moto 2, I have pulled up the crash standings for all three classes. So Gabriel Rodrigo wins the crash contest for the year with 27 total falls in Moto 3. That is the second most of any rider across all classes. Nicolo Antonelli is second in Moto 3 with 21. And then tied with 18 crashes throughout the year, i.e. averaging one a race weekend, is Darren Binder, Andrea Locatelli, Adam Norodin, and Stefano Valtellini, all of them having 18. Jorge Navarro is fourth overall in the crash standings with 17. Aaron Canet, fifth with 16. And then Juanfran Guevara and Andrea Mignot with 13 crashes each.
I'll take a wild stab in the dark from Moto 2.
Don't spoil it. We'll get to that one in a second. So speaking of Moto 2, we had Moto 2 qualifying. It was Johann Zarco who took pole by 0.006 of a second from Tom Lutie ahead of Franco Morbidelli. No surprises there. Alex Rins fifth. No real surprise there, as we said. Matteo Pessini fourth. That was a big surprise. Earlier in the weekend, Matteo Pessini had somehow managed to destroy his motorcycle. It had no front end and no back end left on it. I don't
bit
know.
Bit of work for the boys to do, wasn't it?
I don't know how he managed to do that. And Pessini himself seemed absolutely fine. He got up and sort of shook his head in a very Matteo Pessini way. But
where were the fastest crashes at the weekend? Turn one and turn four?
Turn one, yeah, turn four would have been pretty quick.
Turn 12.
Turn 12 is another one because that's a right-hander after a fair few lefts. I think Pessini's was at turn 12, I think. I'm not 100%
okay.
Sure.
Yeah, that's going to dig in and maybe cause a grand or two's worth of damage, yeah.
Yes. So then we had Julian Simon in sixth, and then we had Denny Kent somewhat surprisingly in eighth. Denny Kent this weekend fired his crew chief, Peter Bourne. They were already going to part company at the end of the season, but Kent said, no, I want him out now. Peter Bourne got out, and you know, fair play to Danny for making the call. His results instantly improved, and he was in the top 10 for basically the entire weekend, and then had a pretty solid race considering, you know, it was his first time with this new crew chief.
Sometimes a rider does know best.
Yeah, exactly. So then we got to the Moto 2 race. And there was a pretty good battle out the front. It consisted mostly of Johann Zarco and Franco Morbidelli. Morbidelli, once again, he's just a thrilling rider to watch.
He is.
Hyper, hyper aggressive, but maybe not as dangerous as he was with that aggression last year. Definitely, you know, controlling the aggression a bit more Valentino Rossi than Andrea Iannone in terms of, you know, riding and how they use that aggressiveness.
Oh, no question. He's smoothed out an awful lot. Some of the overtakes, they were challenging, but they were clean from both of them. They were, obviously they were tripping each other a little bit through the race, but it was good to see. It was proper good end of season punch up, wasn't it?
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
And then
Morbidelli, he also had battles with Lutie and with Rins. You know, all four of those guys at some point basically had a battle with each other. So it was a pretty exciting Moto 2 race overall.
But when you look at the lap chart, it doesn't look the most entertaining of races.
No.
But when you actually look at how many times positions change during the lap, these are the positions over the start-finish line, but the actual changes of position during the laps were quite entertaining. And overall, it was a pretty enjoyable race.
Yep. Yeah, pretty solid. I mean, there was nothing super remarkable. You know, in the results, it was Zarco who won ahead of Thomas Lutu with Franco Morbidelli third. That first win for Morbidelli is right around the corner.
Oh, it is.
You know, him and Ludi easily step in as the title favourites next season, I think. Sam Lowes managed to actually finish a race. He was fourth. Funnily enough, big thank you to Steve Day for this stat. I don't know if you watched the World Feed, Dave. Guess how many racing laps Lowes did during the three flyaway races?
Racing laps. So that's Motegi, Phillip Island and Sepang. So I didn't see, I'm not building this up. I genuinely didn't see the coverage. I only managed to catch the highlights earlier on.
Four laps.
And it's not Steve. I was going to say five, so I wouldn't have been far off.
Yeah, four laps across all three races is how many racing laps Lowes did over the flyaways.
So halfway around the world for 3 weeks.
To do four laps. Whereas Franco Morbidelli, this was his fifth podium in a row.
And this is what I was just about to say. He is showing the consistency of a true championship contender.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's going to win it next season. The guys that are coming up, the guys that are going to be towards the front, Danny Kent with the change of chassis and the change of crew chief. I think I'd really like to see 2017 being the Moto2 season where it actually comes to life the best it can do. You know, it's never going to be Moto3 in that sense, but with four or five guys fighting for the championship, four or five guys fighting for the race wins each week.
And hard racing as well, you know. Moto2 has some incredible racing winners, you know, Marquez, Redding, Bradle, Iannone, Pola Spargo. All those
guys. Go back
to
those days,
I'd
be quite happy. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We go back to those days, and I think it has the potential to do that for next season as well, with the young bloods coming through and some of the more experienced guys. But I think, for me, my money's on Morbidelli for next season.
Yeah, probably. You know, Ludi's been in that class for so long, and, you know, we've spoken about it a lot that, you know, Ludi, while Morbidelli, you know, maybe has too much aggression, Ludi lacks the aggression. So, you know, if you could sort of share out the aggression between Morbidelli and Ludi, that would probably make two excellent riders. But, yeah, Morbidelli definitely has a bit of an edge because, you know, guys like Nakagami, he was sixth this race. Nakagami, on his day, great rider, but just blows a bit hot and cold.
Absolutely. And it goes back to that C word again. It's that consistency thing. And five podiums on the bounce in that class. If you can keep your head while all around are losing theirs, it's, to quote a little bit of Rudyard Kipling, that's close as I get really to classical English literature, unfortunately. Then it does bode well for next season on all counts. Moto3 does, Moto2 does, and as we'll come on to, so does the Premier Blue Ribbon class. So, yeah, that's going to be something a little bit special for next season. But as you say, it was Zarco that took the win from Lutti and Morbidelli, his fifth in a row, Sam Lowes in fourth place. Championship standings, Zarco was already champion, obviously, before we got to Valencia. He leads the way for the final time on 276 points, ahead of Thomas Lutti on 234. Alex Rins, 214. Morbidelli just missing out on third place by a single point. In fourth place, Sam Lowes, fifth. Nakagami, sixth. Folger Baldessari, Hafiz Sairin, and Simone Corsi on the lead speed up. The lead speed up, the other one being 17th, Javier Simeon, rounds out the top 10 for 2016.
Yep, exactly. And now we will come on to the crashes. And Dave, would you like to hazard a guess as to who is leading the crash chart?
I'm going to have a wild stab in the dark. Potentially, I think it just be shaded by Sam Lowes.
Yes, it is. Sam Lowes leads not only the Moto2 crash chart, but the crash chart overall for all riders across all three classes. Would you like a guess at how many crashes?
30?
Exactly!
I'll confess to seeing Matt Oxley's tweet earlier today. I'm not going to take credit for that. I did see the tweet earlier that said 30.
So yeah, 30 crashes, that's you know, what's that? That's like 1.6 crashes or something, a GP. That's
a lot.
Yeah, a lot of falls.
It's too many. He's lucky to have escaped. The amount of crashes he's had, he's lucky to have escaped injury that would keep him out of consecutive GPs.
Yeah, certainly. Axel Pons, no surprise, second with 21 crashes. Xavier Simeon, third with 20 crashes. Then Corsi, Alex Marquez, Mattia Pessini, and Rathbart Willerot. They're all tied for fourth with 18. Luca Marini on 17 crashes. Sandro Cortesi with 16 crashes. And Julien Simon, seventh on the crash chart with 15. Interestingly enough, Julien Simon has actually retired from racing and will now work as Tito Rabat's MotoGP coach.
Yeah, he appeared, didn't he, on the team photo. It wasn't really announced or anything. It just seemed to be, oh, yeah, Ian Wheeler when he posted it. Oh, yeah, Julien's now working for us.
And a bit of an interesting pairing. Tito Rabat getting coached by Julien Simon, a man who never won a Moto2 Grand Prix and who has never ridden a MotoGP bike, to my knowledge.
No. Riding a motorcycle.
I guess he can still go out on cycle. But... Yeah, and he can still go out and spot lines, you know, better than you or I could. So,
well, absolutely. Well, if you see that, a lot of the time that John Laverty spends doing that for Eugene.
Yeah.
John being a former racer, but never raced at GP level. He was British Superstock, British Superbike, but I don't think John ever raced at international level at that kind of level. So, but you can still pick lines, you can still pick up when the corner entry, corner exit, picking a bike. They see far more things than you or I would stood trackside, as has been proved many, many times before.
Yep, exactly. So that's Moto 2. You know, obviously next season should hopefully be pretty good. Then moving on to MotoGP, you know, probably the big news coming into the weekend was that KTM made their debut. Not quite the debut that KTM were expecting. KTM, you know, basically from the off said, we didn't expect to be this far behind. They're having huge issues with rear grip. So, you know, a bit disappointing for KTM, but, you know, there is still a fair little way to go. And, you know, Aprilia is definitely a realistic and a pretty solid aim for them to, you know, sort of reach and challenge.
Oh, of course.
So
yeah, no doubt.
In Q1, we had Cal Crutchlow and Daniele Petrucci. They went through. Hector Barbera, Scott Redding, Jack Miller, they just missed out. Loris Baz, Stefan Bradl, Bautista, Eugene Laverty, Mika Kallio in 20th on the grid, Tito Rabat, and then Yoni Hernandez. There was a bit of an incident with the Aprilias and Cal Crutchlow. Cal Crutchlow then went to the press and basically didn't name Stefan Bradl by name, but said, "The fucking German."
Narrows it down.
Yeah, narrows it down a bit. And then said, oh, you know, all of these people who can't hack the pace. And, you know, it's clear that it's great that he's getting out of here. And, you know, we need faster riders and what they're doing is stupid. And, you know, if they keep doing this, they're going to end in the gravel with a broken back. And
to which Bradl countered.
Yeah. And said, it wasn't me. It was Bautista, actually.
I don't know what he's talking about. It wasn't me.
And then, yeah, it was sort of, you know, a typical Cal Crutchlow rant, you know. As much as we do like Cal's honesty, he can also, you know, be a bit explosive at times.
Just a little bit.
But, you know, obviously being sat on the bike and all that sort of thing is very different. So maybe it was they were all justified comments. But, you know, it at least gave us something to have a bit of a giggle about.
And props to Mika Kallio for not being the least fastest in qualifying.
Yeah, exactly. He was, you know... He was solidly ahead. He was, you know, a bit over a tenth faster than Yoni Hernandez and Tito Rabat. Hernandez, who's had, like, what, 3 or 4 years in MotoGP now, and Tito Rabat, who's on a Honda, on a bike that's won a GP. So, yeah, so, pretty good.
Yeah, props to them. It shows good potential, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Into Q2, quite possibly, well, alongside the one he did, I think, last year.
Yeah,
at the same place.
Yeah, which he also called his best lap ever.
But now has also again done his best lap ever. Jorge Lorenzo's lap in qualifying was simply stunning. I mean, we were effusive about his lap. I remember last year, and this one again was literally the same. It was absolute poetry in motion. Yeah. Just something, you know, the true Jorge Lorenzo, inch perfect, even around, you know, turn 14, which is usually a sideways, everything was in line, everything neat and tidy and compact, every apex, every pickup was absolutely on point. Jorge Lorenzo on pole, 129.401, 1.340 ahead of a hard charging Marc Marquez. Valentino Rossi rounding out the front row ahead of next season's teammate Maverick Vinales. The lead Ducati of Andrea Dovizioso and Paul Espargaro in sixth place on his swan song for the Monster Yamaha Tech 3 team.
Yep, bit of a surprise.
It was, yeah, that to see the Tech 3 bike so far up ahead of the factory Ducati of Iannone, obviously, who's still carrying injury. Danny Pedrosa struggling a little bit down in eighth place. Espargaro on the second, Suzuki in ninth. Bradley Smith on the Tech 3 ran out the top 10. Ahead of Cal Crutchlow, it was a fairly disappointing qualifying for him. And Danilo Petrucci in 12th place.
Yes, and then we got to the race. The fight for first was pretty brief and pretty lackluster.
Mostly 98 yards, I think.
Yes, mostly down to the bad start of Marc Marquez. As we saw later in the race, Marquez maybe had the pace to challenge Lorenzo, and you know, maybe if the race had been five laps longer or something, he would have caught him. But you know, if buts and maybes and all that. But no, Jorge Absolutely. Lorenzo did as Jorge Lorenzo did. He signed off his time at Yamaha in perhaps the best way he could, you know, with an incredibly smooth pole lap, you know, beautiful to watch, as you said, Dave, poetry in motion. And then he won a race in true Jorge Lorenzo style. You know, it might not be the most exciting style to win a race, but he put in those laps and, you know, he hit every apex and was just so, so smooth. And yeah, he did what Lorenzo did best. And that's, in my opinion, is the best way to sign out of his time with Yamaha.
Absolutely. Just as a guide to what Lorenzo was doing from lap 2 to lap 10, there was only a 0.2 variance in his lap times. He was running between 131.1 and 131.3 for 8 consecutive laps. And it was after lap 11 that the time started to drop away as the rear grip diminished. Mm. And I think this is what the plan for the race was to get away while he could, not expecting obviously Marquez to have such a bad start, but he knew that the Honda's later race pace was better than his.
Yep, certainly. And you know, as I mentioned, you know, we did see that that Marquez's bad start meant that he had to fight through Maverick Vinales, Valentino Rossi, and Andrea Iannone.
And that was a battle.
That was definitely a battle. Andrea Iannone and Valentino Rossi went at it absolutely hammer and tongs.
Fantastic.
A great race between those two. You know, Marc Marquez, he had a couple of attacks there, but it definitely seemed like Marc Marquez was sort of happy to sit there and let those two duke it out for a little bit and just wait for his opportunity. But when his opportunity did arise, he was able to slip through and then did try and close down Jorge Lorenzo. No quarter given between Iannone and Valentino Rossi. A couple of times they got forced a bit wide, you know, looked like there was maybe a couple of small touches here and there.
Yeah.
But thrilling to see between those two. Great to see, you know, much like Jorge Lorenzo, great to see Andrea Iannone sign off his time at Ducati in typical Crazy Joe, the maniac, whatever he's been called this year, style, and really, really push Valentino Rossi around.
So really, for what was essentially a dead rubber with all three championships decided, the racing was, it was a pretty good way to sign off the season.
Yeah, exactly. So Jorge Lorenzo, he eventually won the race by a second from Marquez, with Iannone third, Rossi fourth, Maverick Vinales somewhat distant fifth, Paul Espargaro the leading privateer machine ahead of Andrea Dovizioso. Then we had a DNF for Mika Kallio. KTM had a problem with the speed sensor, I believe it was. Crutchlow crashed. Danny Pedrosa, unfortunately, crashed, as did Yoni Hernandez. Eugene Laverty, unfortunately, failed to score in his last race. Teter Rabat failed to score. Loris Baz failed to score. Scott Redding, hugely disappointing, 14th for him. I'm 99% sure that Daniele Petrucci will have the 2017 Ducati next year. So a bit disappointing there from Scott Redding. I don't know. Scott Redding just sort of seems to be on the cusp of greatness at the start of a season, but then nothing really happens throughout the course of a season.
It has been disappointing for Scott this season, certainly. I was expecting a little more. Certainly, as far as a championship goes, I was expecting him at least to be inside the top 10.
Exactly. So then we move to the championship standings. As we said, Marc Marquez, 298 points. Great point haul from him ahead of Valentino Rossi, 249. Jorge Lorenzo clung on to third place, 233 points. Then Maverick Vinales, 202 points. When was the last time we saw a Suzuki ahead of a Ducati in a MotoGP World Championship standings? I cannot remember, because Andrea Dovizioso was the leading Ducati in fifth, ahead of Danny Pedrosa, Cal Crutchlow in seventh, and only 14 points behind Danny Pedrosa. Not too bad for Cal.
Not too bad at all.
Then Paul Espargaro, 8th. Andre Iannone, 9th place. Pretty disappointing from him, but of course, he spent, you know, a couple of races out injured and then also spent the first half of the season taking other riders out. Hector Barbera in 10th. Really, actually, really, really good result for Alvaro Bautista in 12th.
No, it is. I was just about to say that. Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. I think...
82 points. Not bad. Not bad at all.
No. For a guy, you know, he almost a forgotten man of MotoGP, isn't he? And moving to the Aprilia was like, well, that's the end of his career in that respect. But no, I think it's about on the Aprilia and what Aprilia are doing. I mean, when you look what his teammate further back down, yeah. 63 points. That's, you know, top 12. I think that's decent for Bautista.
And he beat out Scott Redding, who had an entire year on the factory Ducati. Sure, you know, guys like Petrucci, like Bradley Smith, and like Jack Miller were out, you know, occasionally injured. But, you know, to beat out Scott Redding, who had an entire season, I think that's a pretty commendable result for Bautista and for Aprilia.
And I would agree.
You know, maybe the Aprilia not so bad. Michele Pirro was 19th with his couple of, you know, replacement rides and wildcards. And with Pirro in 19th, that meant he was ahead of Loris Baz, Tito Rabat, and Yoni Hernandez. Hernandez, the lowest scoring of the permanent MotoGP riders, with just 20 points.
And heading to Moto2 next season.
Yes, exactly. So
he's
that was
a big lad to be on a Moto2 machine.
Yes, he is a very, very big lad. So now we come to the MotoGP crash charts before we quickly go over to testing, where we will have some real fun discussions. It is Cal Crutchlow who leads that with 26 crashes. Not a big surprise there, given the start to the season he had. And he also had a bit of a crashy end to the season, those last two or three races.
Yeah, he did.
Jack Miller, second with 25 crashes. Again, no real surprise there. Then tied for third place, Marc Marquez and Yoni Hernandez with 17 each. Then tied for fourth is Bautista, Laverty and Rabat, all with 16. Alicia Spargo, fifth with 15. And then Stefan Bradl and Paul Espargaro, sixth with 14 crashes. As you can see, the MotoGP guys are, you know, sort of crashing slightly less, obviously with the 7th place rider in Moto2 crashing 15 times and the 6th place rider crashing 14 times in the Premier class. But anyway, now on to the real juicy stuff. Testing. First of all, testing liveries, Dave. What a year for testing liveries. You know, we say that testing can be a bit boring. You know, sometimes black carbon bikes are nice, but, you know, sometimes they can be a little bland. But
they can, but it depends on also what the rider wears as well.
Exactly. Alex Rins, Andre Iannone,
wow,
and Maverick Vinales, all three of those guys, a big Motopod thank you for making some very, very attractive motorcycles and leathers. And
no question.
Especially Maverick Vinales.
Vinales was just, that was the special of the special liveries for me. That was just,
maybe the best livery ever.
I think so. I mean, the black and the riff,
fluorescent red edging, and then it had, you know, aircraft warnings all over it.
It did, yeah.
And just, and, wow. Everything was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. If for some reason you live in Motopod land and haven't seen it, then do go search Maverick Vinales testing liveries. You know, MotoGP.com. They have a huge amount of photos up there. Andre Iannone.
Yeah, they've got a great selection.
Andre Iannone, his testing livery looked pretty good as well. Unfortunately, it spent a lot of time in the gravel. So much time, in fact, that Andre Iannone had to go grab an off-the-shelf pair of Dionysi leathers because he'd crashed all of his testing ones and obviously couldn't go back into the Ducati ones. But
maybe having that DNA molecule on the side, that adrenaline molecule,
yeah,
on the side, it needs to be changed
less,
to something.
A little less.
Yeah, maybe a little bit smaller.
Here's the chemical structure of diazepam. Calm down. In fairness, it was a good ad for Dionysi, right? You know, Andre Iannone, a professional MotoGP rider using an off-the-peg suit for MotoGP testing is a pretty decent ad.
I'm still on the diazepam thing. That's brilliant. Did you practice that one before
you
delivered it?
No, I didn't, actually.
Is that really off the cuff?
Yeah, I was a bit worried that diazepam wasn't the right thing.
I don't care. It works for me.
Prozac, maybe? I don't know. Anyway.
There's Prozac, diazepam, temazepam, or anything, but it fits, mate. Just take it. It works for me.
I'm glad. But yeah, Andrea had a lot of crashes. Alex Rins, he also had a very big crash and in fact cracked two vertebra, which is
these MotoGP bikes, they bite, don't they? They're fast old machines compared to the Moto2 bikes.
I believe that Alex Rins's tweet today after being, given his phone back after being in hospital, was the asphalt feels a little harder in MotoGP.
Yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it. Really is. That's an excellent way of looking at it.
So yeah,
it was fascinating. Overall, it was just fascinating in general. I was at work for the 2 days that the test was on. And so I had to follow it through Twitter. We've been quite quiet at work, and obviously I don't have my phone with me, but I do really. so I've been keeping topside of the test and what's been going on. Huge props to Neil Morrison and to Pete McLaren, Steve English with his cameos as well on Twitter, and David Emmett at Moto Matters. What an outstanding test coverage that those guys provided while they were out there. Didn't leave any stone unturned, and especially with the differences between the Ducati, who was running the 17, Lorenzo was. Awful lot of misinformation had going around and different sides to the story and trying to get the truth out of people. As David Emmett, I think he was tweeting today, or it was in one of his articles, that the press are getting less and less information out of the team. So that it's becoming harder and harder to report on MotoGP these days to actually find out what's going on. Who was trying to find out who was on, whether Lorenzo was out on the 17 bike, whether he's on the 16 bike. In the end, I think at the end of the first day, he only did the one lap on the 17, just as a dialing in lap.
Yeah, installation lap. Make
installation
sure
lap. That's the word. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. But I mean, overall, you were following it as well as best you could from work.
Yeah, we had it up on the work TV, muted because unfortunately not everybody in the office likes MotoGP. But I heard testing compared to test cricket, where it's a very good thing to have on in the background. It's maybe not the most exciting or maybe not the best use of your time to sit there in front of a computer and watch it 100% devoted to it. But certainly it's good to have in a bit of a communal space if you're all working and all like MotoGP. Good to have someone shout like, oh look at this, and then it's Ian One getting ridiculously sideways on the Suzuki, which he was doing quite frequently, and
that's a beautiful piece that you posted onto the Facebook page.
Yes, it was absolutely incredible. If you haven't seen that, the Motopod Facebook fan page, go on there and have a look at Andrea Ian One torturing a rear Michelin tire and doing his best Gary McCoy impersonation. Because Ian One, sure, he crashed a lot, but he was pretty quick on the Suzuki, and he looked absolutely incredible doing it. Bringing, I don't even know what style it is to that Suzuki. It really is
Speedway,
Gary McCoy-esque.
It really is, yeah. If you think Gary McCoy-esque, you think of Melandri out of the final turn at Phillip Island. It's that kind of smoking.
And he wasn't doing it on purpose like Melandri was. It seemed like this was just, when he was starting to push for a faster lap.
It certainly wasn't showboating, because he was absolutely on the pipe for it. He wasn't just rolling out and lighting it up, releasing a little bit of weight off the back and sitting forward and letting it light up. He was absolutely charging. Yeah, it was just an incredible, great for camera work as well from the dawn of the TV crews. Superb footage.
Yep, certainly. So we'll mostly focus on the day two times, because I think that overall those were a bit faster. So we'll go through those times and say a little bit about each rider. But on the first day, just a couple of things from that first day, Francesco Bagnaia, he got to ride the Ducati for 9 laps as a reward for taking 2 race wins in Moto3. Unsurprisingly, he was about 6 seconds off the pace. As I said, not surprisingly, because he's never ridden a MotoGP and he only got 9 laps on it.
But imagine how long it took him to get his helmet off over that grin.
Yeah, he did say that hitting 313 Ks was the fastest he had ever been. And yeah, that must be a pretty impressive jump to, one day. Obviously, Jack Miller's done it, but now Pecco Bagnaia has done it. Bagnaia, of course, will be in Moto2. We also had Lowe's had a pretty big crash on that first day. He went to hospital, and I don't think it ever came out what actually happened to Lowe's, but he didn't ride second day. So maybe a bit of concussion or something, maybe?
Potentially so, yeah. It was a huge crash. I mean, what had he done? 63 laps?
Yep, 63 laps, and then crashed on his 64th.
And crashed on the 64th lap. I think as conditions were getting a little bit cooler, weren't they? It was catching one or two out towards the end of the day. The temperatures dropped away pretty quickly. But yeah, I mean, with 30 crashes across a season, 63 laps without a crash is a pretty, you know, not. I'm being genuine on this one. I'm not actually taking the piss. But 63 laps. Obviously, he's had a couple of tests on the RSV4. Misano sticking out in my mind at one point as well.
I think there were two or three.
He's done a couple of tests there, hasn't he? So he's not unfamiliar to the bike. So 63 laps on the bounce for Sam Lowes before the big bounce put him in hospital to sit out day two. Nothing ever did come out as to the whys and wherefores, for sure he'll be. He's back out at Aprilia at Jerez.
Yes, he should be. Alex Rins won't be at Jerez, as we said on day two. Alex Rins did crack two vertebra. Andrea Iannone crashed not too long after at the same corner, turn 12, I believe it is.
It was
that right hander coming onto the back straight. Iannone's crash caused about an hour long red flag because during the race weekend, I believe they'd had an air fence there, but they'd taken that away for the test. And after the crashes there of the Suzukis and a couple of other guys, lots of MotoGP riders said, hey, you need to sort this out or we're not going back out. So they got up.
Yeah, they were looking at the track, weren't they? There was an awful lot of rubber on the white line or something that made it a little bit icy. But I read different points of view on that. Some say that that could have been the cause. Some say it was a drop in the temperature. They also did track inspection as well to make sure there was nothing, no fluid actually on the track that was causing that, because there's that spate of crashes, and they're fast crashes as well there. They'd done off, it was an expensive period of time.
I mean, both those Suzukis, and I think also the Suzuki test rider, Suda-san, I think his bike hit the wall there. But yeah, but when both Rins and Iannone went down, their bikes went into the tire wall. So not good.
Not a cheap test for Suzuki at all.
No.
The biggest on, if we go through just a quick overview of the first day, Maverick Viñales. Yep. Wow.
Yep, Maverick Viñales, first day, led the day by only, 200ths of a second, so pretty close to Valentino Rossi. Jorge Lorenzo, 0.1 of a second back on Maverick Viñales. This is the first day, as we said, just a quick recap. Then Marc Marquez, fourth, so, pretty good day. For the second day, I think we'll start from the bottom and work our way up. Carol Abraham, 22nd. I don't have anything remarkable to say. Just shout if you have something remarkable to say about any of these riders.
Certainly not about Carol Abraham, no.
Eugene Laverty, 21st. He was out there testing the Aprilia, did 57 laps in total for them, and about 2.5 seconds off the pace. Bradley Smith on the KTM, he had a bit of a crash as well. He was 20th overall. His crash was quite small in comparison. Loris Baz was 19th, Tieter about 18th, Pol Espargaró on the KTM, he was 17th, and within 2 seconds of Maverick Viñales as a day-topping time,
That's encouraging.
Yeah, not too bad, closer than Callio was certainly straight off the bat, and Callio had obviously had a lot more time on that bike. Pol Espargaró is a bit more race-fit and a bit more race-tuned, but there's stuff to come from that KTM for both of those guys. It's still pretty early days, and even that first year is going to be pretty tricky for them. So Pol Espargaró there, just ahead was Michele Pirro. Pirro was substituting for Daniele Petrucci. Petrucci had to go back to Italy for family reasons. Not sure what that was about. Hector Barbera, who gets a GP16, he was 15th behind fellow GP16 rider Alvaro Bautista.
That's going to be a big step for him, right? Was he on the 14.2?
Yes. No, Barbera was on a 15, I think.
Oh, he was on a 15, was it? It was Laverty that was on the 14.2.
Yeah. Yep.
Still a decent step and a reasonable change to get used to for Hector Barbera, so that's not too bad.
Yeah, exactly. Bautista 14th, doing pretty well, not too bad. Both Bautista and Barbera were within a tenth of Scott Redding. Scott Redding 13th. Jack Miller 12th. A second back, so not too bad. But these next two riders, hold my hands up and say I did not think they would be this quick. Johann Zarco 11th, 1.040 back on the fastest time, and then Jonas Folgren 10th and under a second from the leader. So sure, those could have very well been one off hot laps, But very encouraging to see both of those guys and the Tech 3 team up there. Once again, I did not expect them to be that quick.
No, I'm quite in the same camp as you. It's to sit back and go, oh, okay, yeah, that'll do nicely. Yeah. I wasn't expecting when Tech 3 announced that they were taking on Zarco and Folger. It was like, oh, really? Okay, not the riders that we would have chosen if we were offered the say, okay, pick our riders for next season. They're not the first two that would have been top of the sheets, but no, fantastic for them. And the first, like you say, could be a one-off flyer, could be a nice set of laps. But as it stands, and they set fairly well into the day, 55 yeah. out of 61, 62 out of 63. So yeah, towards the end of the day of the second day. But
yeah, you definitely had a period to get on and ride it. Yeah, and you definitely had a period of about half an hour where all the guys around that time of day were sort of just going out there and seeing what they could do for a hot lap to, you know, try and grab some attention.
And this is where testing sometimes it muddies the waters a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Because the only thing we really have to do without huge, huge, huge amounts of analysis is these one-off fast laps.
Yeah, you've got to take everything at face value, haven't you?
Yeah, maybe for the Sepang test or something, we can go into a bit deeper analysis. But, you know, the Valencia test for lots of riders is just a bit of a shakedown. You know, lots of the riders weren't even on the full 2017 bikes. Ninth, we had Alicia Spargo on the Aprilia. Dave,
so let's try that bit again.
Yeah, I think you have some words to say on Alicia Spargo.
You stick him on a bike. We've said this before. He's not particularly a championship contender, hasn't been across a series. And as we said before, you know, he's not a purebred race winner in that sense. But you look what he did on the forward Yamaha. You look what he did on the Suzuki. He's a prime candidate to take the Aprilia to that next level, as he did with the forward machine, as he did with the Suzuki. This is a great chance for Alicia Spargaro. Sure, he would like to have been kept on at Suzuki in the factory squad and was pretty pissed off with the situation, understandably. But to haul the Aprilia around to within a second of the fastest man and do a 130.8, which is about three quarters of the way through his allocation of 61 laps. So it wasn't sort of towards the end on a fast lap. This is the guy that will really, I think Sam Lowes will benefit
just
from this,
to,
certainly.
Just to quickly put that into perspective, the 130.8 was a full second faster than Bradl and Bautista went in Q1.
So that the proof of the pudding straight away that he's already taken the potential of the Aprilia towards that next step to be to be at the forefront of tier two, if you like, which I would suggest is where Aprilia want to be and where really they deserve to be as a factory team.
Yeah, if they can consistently be finishing, you know, above the satellite riders and behind Yamaha, Honda, Ducati, and, you know, maybe challenging Suzuki. I don't know if they'll be able to challenge Iannone, but certainly I think Spargaro will be able to challenge, you know, guys like Alex Rins. You know, for them to basically be the how many factories are there? For them to be the fifth factory team in the standings, and to, you know, maybe take a top 10 spot in the Riders' Championship overall at the end of the season. I don't think that they're going to be able to, you know, take a top five, but I think that's a pretty good goal for them, and certainly to make KTM work for it.
Yeah, and you want to take on your Mark VDS for Jack Miller, which is a pretty well specced out Honda, and you want to take Monster Yamaha Tech 3 as well. You know, they're the people that he's going to be racing against and wanting to beat. Mm. And I think the launch from Suzuki may well have just lit the fire under him a little bit to go, well, you know, screw you, I'll show you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Hopefully.
Hopefully so. But yeah, I think for anybody to go on that, for them to put anybody on that machine, I think Alicia Spargaro is a good shout for that, and he will serve them well.
Yep. And then in eighth place was Jorge Lorenzo, 0.769 back on the fastest rider. Obviously, Jorge Lorenzo has a gagging order on him, much like Maverick Vinales, where he can't say anything about the Ducati, be it good or bad. Because he's contracted to Yamaha till the end of the year. You know, there was that whole thing of how he can't go to the private Jerez test, yada, yada, yada. You know, Yamaha are completely in their rights to do that. Whatever, we're not talking about that now. But it seemed like everybody else within Ducati, you know, Gigi Delinea, Chiabatti, and all of those guys were very pleased with Jorge Lorenzo and seemed pretty confident. You know, anytime it cut to the box during testing, everybody was smiles and, you know, joking around. Casey Stoner was spending a lot of time with Jorge Lorenzo.
He had quite a knowing grin, didn't he, at one point when the camera cut to him. He just had a little nod and a little smile.
Yeah, it was just after Maverick Vinales had done his test topping time. And, you know, Jorge Lorenzo maybe looked a little shocked, or maybe was just, you know, just pulling a silly face. And then Casey Stoner sort of had this very, you know, knowing grin that I think there could be more to come from Jorge Lorenzo. I don't think he's going to be eighth for the entire year. I believe that Martin left us a couple of notes about testing. So this is from Martin. When Valentino Rossi tested the Ducati at the end of the 2010 season, he finished 15th, 1.7 seconds off Casey Stoner's time, the Australian having just ridden a Honda Moto GP bike for the first time since starting in LCR. Comparison to this, Valencia test and Lorenzo's results, third, brackets less than 0.2 off Vinales' top time, seem unfair, according to Martin, as the GP16, which is the bike Lorenzo is riding, as we said, is a very different beast from the GP10, GP11 that Rossi rode, but that didn't stop Jorge Lorenzo's father, Chico, from sticking the knife into Rossi. I think it's pretty fair that, you know, Ducati is in a very different situation now to when Rossi was there. Of course, people are going to make those comparisons, but I have a tendency to agree.
I don't think you really can. They're light years apart, those bikes. Absolute light years. It doesn't even figure into my thinking when you look at it. You know, I'm not a Rossi beater or anything like that. Sure, I admire what Lorenzo does. But it's not even entered into my head to compare the two, because they are light years apart in machinery. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, no, so that was pretty much it, just that, you know, don't be too mean to Jorge Lorenzo or to Valentino Rossi, but yeah, eighth for Lorenzo. As I said, I think that there's more to come, and that Lorenzo will be up there next year. You know, as we always say, it's only testing, it's only the first test. We could be completely wrong, but...
It wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, but as you said, Dave, you know, whenever the camera cut to the box, nobody looked worried or scared. Or anything like that. Everybody inside Ducati looked pretty happy with where they were.
That's right. I mean, it's difficult for them to say. I'm obviously Ducati can talk about it. They can talk about various aspects of the test, and obviously not what they were testing. We don't know what was on the bike. We don't know how the variations were between the 16 and the 17. Obviously, as you said, Jorge Lorenzo, he's gagged until Sepang, basically. By the time he gets out there, the bike will be a little bit different again by then. But there was a great piece that Pete McLaren put together at Crash.net about Gigi Delinea's thoughts on Jorge Lorenzo and how they work together. He was really pleased with how things had gone on the first couple of days. They both need to work together. The factory need to work with Jorge. It's the standard thing that you would expect him to say, but it was certainly said with a great deal of enthusiasm and a lot of the smiles from Jorge. He's not known as a grinner, is he? When you look into into the box with Yamaha, very, very rare did you see him crack a smile, but at Ducati, he's absolutely grinning. Maybe he's seen how many zeros are on the end of his Philip Morris pay packet. And to be fair, that would make me grin. But he, you know,
the other thing I really liked about Lorenzo is that obviously when he came up to MotoGP, when he switched to 99 rather, he had one that had an angel halo and the other had the devil horns. And, you know, that was sort of always his motif, and, oh, he's copying Rossi, yada, yada, yada. But now at Ducati, they've switched to two nines with two sets of devil horns. So I'm hoping that that's a bit of a message for the year going ahead, that, you know, Lorenzo's really just going to lean into this, you know, lean into this air quotes villain character, not care. And just, you know,
and
focus
be
on
happy
riding
with his
Ducati.
Riding. There was definitely undertones. It was definitely hard for both riders in Yamaha to be top dog and one getting a little more than the other in the terms of, you know, it's Valentino Rossi and his connection with the ranch and Yamaha and everything else. It was always going to be difficult for Lorenzo to be the true top dog in that team. Whereas at Ducati, he will be a clear top dog in that respect.
Yep, exactly. No worries about Dovizioso.
not really. However, maybe not the same in Yamaha when you get rid of one fast teammate, another fast teammate rocks up just to replace the other one.
Yes, exactly.
So that's going to be a tough one there. But yeah, no, for Jorge Lorenzo, eighth place is a decent return, I think. Third place on the opening day was that closed a few critics' mouths.
About 0.3 off his teammate as well, I should say.
Yeah, and opened a few other mouths. Thankfully, one or two jaws agog at that. Valentino Rossi on day two, seventh place.
He spent most of the day.
He's not happy, is he? He's been quite vocal about the new Yamaha engine.
He was doing most of the development work because, you know, Vinales is just adjusting the bike. So yeah, Valentino Rossi was testing the engine a bit more, and as you rightly said, Dave, not a happy chappy. Says that Yamaha need to do a bit more, and I don't know. It seemed to be going okay for Maverick Vinales.
Obviously he was going to expect Maverick was going to be quick. Everybody expected him to be quick. Quite how quick, I don't think people quite expected that. But yeah, he very, very vociferous about the engine. So, you know, we expect more when we get to Sepang. Maybe not this last test that they have next week, end of next week.
Yamaha at Sepang, doing a private thing there. I can guarantee that there'll be no coverage out of that test. That will be full on.
None whatsoever.
2017 development, and it'll be, no cameras, nothing. Maybe a press release at the end.
That'll be about it. But then obviously we all look towards the big Sepang test on the first weekend or the first week of February. That's when the new revised Yamaha engine will arrive, and then we'll see for certain by the end of that first, is it a 3-day test? 2-day test? Can't remember.
I don't know.
Whichever one. I'm not putting you on the spot. It's fine. We'll see then a little more shakedown as to how next year will pan out. Cal Crutchlow in sixth place. Nothing too spectacular. It's about what we expected. What we didn't expect was the outgoing HRC boss, Shuhei Nakamoto, when asked about Cal Crutchlow's outburst about we need more support at LCR Honda from the factory. He was a little bemused by it all when he said he's riding the same chassis as Danny Pedrosa and his bike is pretty much factory. So what more can we do?
Yeah.
There was a little bit of that went down kind of like a lead balloon, really. Danny Pedrosa ahead of Cal Crutchlow. Andrea Iannone in fourth on his Suzuki debut. A decent return from him, I would suggest.
Yeah, really good. You know, we've already spoken a bit about Andrea Iannone. He certainly looks really good on that Suzuki. You know, we've seen that Suzuki can compete at the front. And I expect Iannone to, in all honesty, be putting in pretty similar performances to what he had in 2016, hopefully with a few less crashes, but... Yeah. I don't think that it's going to slow down Iannone too much. I think that
it certainly looks. Nimble little thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think that of all things, it could be good for Iannone because you know a bit like Rossi and Lorenzo at Yamaha. I think Andrea Iannone had a bit of trouble. You know, maybe not being the lead rider at Ducati, or maybe you know having to share that a bit. Whereas at Suzuki now with Rins as his teammate, Iannone will be the clear lead rider in that team. So you know maybe that'll give him a bit more peace of mind. To go out there and race. And yeah, fourth place, really good result from him. You know, within half a second of Marc Marquez. So pretty solid result, especially considering how much he crashed.
Yeah. Also, do you think for Iannone, maybe the pressure of not riding for an Italian manufacturer might be a little bit of a pressure release for him as well?
Yeah, maybe. It could be.
Just hypothesizing again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll certainly be less promotional events for Suzuki. You won't have to go and do, you know, a million Ducati Scrambler photo shoots there every time they bring out a new variant.
Expected, you know, Dovi in third, that's to be expected. Yeah. Marc Marquez on the new variant of engine for Repsol Honda, slightly revised firing order. Would it be a longer firing order?
I believe so. Lots of people were talking about lower notes and all this sort of stuff, and I fucking couldn't hear anything, in all honesty.
we just go with what people say. If that's what they say, if that's what they can hear, fantastic. It just sounds wonderful regardless. And then top of the pile for the second day on the trot to prove that day one wasn't a fluke, and into the only rider of the 2 days into the 129s, Maverick Vinales. Take a bow, sunshine. That's a good couple of days' work.
And not only did his livery look good, but Maverick Vinales on that Yamaha just looked so, so comfortable. You know, everybody who came over to watch a bit of MotoGP testing in the office who, you know, there are people in that office who, as you said before, Dave, have worked for MCN for, you know, 20 years. People who have, you know, worked with the factory Yamaha team. People who have, you know, worked with Bridgestone. And all of them said, how good does Maverick Vinales look on that Yamaha? He just looks completely at home already. He's not as smooth as Jorge Lorenzo on that bike, but he can get that bike to do exactly what he wants.
He's not that already. Polished. He has the potential to be that polished, though. That's more his style, isn't it? First couple of days on the bike, he's a neat and tidy little rider, but by fuck is he quick.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, you know, if you do have the MotoGP.com video pass, maybe don't go and watch all of testing, but certainly if there are some highlights, you know, just go watch Maverick Vinales and just look how it won with that M1 he already is. And can he challenge for the title next year? I don't know. I think a lot of that depends on what happens with Marquez and Jorge Lorenzo, in all honesty. But
he'll certainly be there or thereabouts. He's going to be consistently top four.
Yep. I think that this is just the start of Maverick Vinales. And that, you know, if we thought that we were going to have, you know, a Mick Doohan-esque domination of MotoGP with Marc Marquez on the Honda, you know, Rossi getting older and Lorenzo at Ducati, that is not going to happen. You know, obviously, as we said, Lorenzo showing potential there. Rossi, you know, you can never rule him out. Marc Marquez is still going to be fast. But Maverick Vinales is, I don't think people have realized just how special he's going to be just yet.
No, it's coming though, isn't it? Slowly but surely, he's breaking records here and there, and on his way up, he's matching Marc Marquez, and it's coming. But the fact that he's kept Lorenzo's the bulk of Lorenzo's crew,
yeah,
is vital, because they know that bike inside out. They can make that bike fit him, and they can make him fit that bike. That's the crucial part. He's not bringing. Obviously, there's been a massive merry-go-round of crew chiefs as well through the paddock. That's been almost as dizzying as some of the rider changes. But the consistency with Yamaha is they've kept the majority of Jorge Lorenzo's crew. So they already know the bike. They already know to change where the settings go. They already know how things work. They know what's best for the bike. Just put Maverick on it. Make him comfortable. Let him ride it. And then they'll work together to make it the perfect package.
Yep. And for me, I think that we're seeing the start of potentially a new rivalry, maybe not quite as much hatred there, but, you know, the same sort of rivalry that Valentino Rossi had with Sede Gibernau, with Jorge Lorenzo, you know, these two intense riders who are clearly the best on the field. I think that we could very easily see that between Maverick Vinales and Marc Marquez. Really think that, you know, these next couple of years in MotoGP are going to be absolutely incredible for the racing that we're going to see. Because, yeah, right now, you know, the level of Maverick Vinales, Marc Marquez and Jorge Lorenzo, I think is so incredibly high. You know, no offense to the other riders, but I think that those three guys are... really have the potential as long as the packages are there.
Valentino Rossi must be chuffed to bits to have yet another fast Spaniard to deal with. If he hasn't had to dispatch them in the past.
Going to have to send this one back off to Ducati as well.
So they've got 2 years to beat this guy and then I'm going. I've had enough. These young boys are getting faster. And they are. It's not that Rossi is particularly getting any slower as his pace is proving.
Yeah.
But wow, these young guys, and I think that the Vinales Marquez battle, that's the future, isn't it?
That has the potential to go in, you know, 10 years, if not more. You know, depending. So yeah, you know, that test, the results alone are hugely, hugely exciting. Going into this weekend, I think I was actually a bit more excited for testing than I was the racing. And it didn't disappoint, in all honesty.
No, it didn't. It was a good end to the certainly a good end to the public season.
Yeah.
For the watching public.
Yep. And for the public, MotoGP will be back out at the official test in Sepang from the 30th of January to the 1st of February. That'll be hopefully, I think, televised for Dorna. I don't know. You'll have to check the MotoGP.com website. Then they will go to Phillip Island 2 weeks later from the 15th to the 17th of February. Then the first official Moto2 and Moto3 test will be in Jerez on the 9th and 10th of March. Then obviously we have the MotoGP test in Qatar from the 10th to the 12th of March. And then the Moto2 and Moto3 test on the 17th and 19th of March before the season gets underway yet again. So, you know, there's still going to be a fair few things trickling by to keep everybody entertained.
Yeah, we'll still be here through the off season, won't we? There's the Super Prestigios coming up as well, so we can have a little bit of chats about that.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
So we've still got that to look forward to as well, which takes us into Christmas, and then it's just a build up then up to the first test. So yeah, we will still be around. No question at all.
And there is one final order of business to take care of today, however. It is perhaps the most important championship of the year. It is, of course, the the MCN Motopod Fantasy League, which is now done for the year. It's been a championship of ups and downs. The system hasn't always been the best.
It's been crap.
But, you know, it is tradition. We'll have to see what does happen next year. Obviously, it seems like this system has a tendency to change every year. One minute we're doing only Grand Prix classes, then we're back to BSB World Superbike and MotoGP. Who knows what next year holds? But the winner of the Motopod Fantasy League is Shot Hole Racing, Craig Lowe, with 3,449 points. Craig managed to finish 14th in the overall standings, which is an absolutely incredible effort, sir. Stand up and take a bow, as long as it is safe to do so wherever you are listening to this podcast.
It is safe to do so, because also Craig Lowe is taking part in a good friend of mine, a guy I train with, Brad Howell, is you're doing a 28-day transformation challenge. And I know that Craig Lowe, 2 weeks in, has lost just under a stone and a half in what he's doing. So he can stand up really easily and take a bow, as long as it's not after leg day. He's struggling on leg day.
Well,
so
excellent.
Congratulations, Craig. It's been a good couple of weeks for you, mate.
Yep, congratulations on all fronts, and hopefully it does carry on and continue for you. Second in the Motopod Fantasy League was BF8 Racing, Ben Fetterplace, 3,402 points. Then third overall in the Motopod League was Team B-Side, Royce Farrell, with quadruple 3,333.
Superb. Congratulations to all three of you, Craig, Ben and Royce. Superb display. Well done, fellas.
Yep. And then we come to the Hosts League. It should come as no surprise that Martin Darlington won the Hosts League. He walked it. You know,
he really did.
He pretty much destroyed us. I'll hold my hands up and say, fair play, Martin. Huge ass racing, 12th overall in the Motopod sub-league, 3,080 points. Well done, Martin. Then I somehow managed second place and to crack the top 100, 97th overall, 1,945. Scott Bolton was second. I believe Scott was leading at one point, so a bit of a tough end to the season for Scott. 111 points overall, ahead of you. In 119th,
I think four substitutions that I made all year when I remembered to make them.
That would be a four more than me, so no worries.
Oh, then cheers. Yeah,
182nd is Len Padilla, 1,189. And then Skylar Vicroy, who joined a bit late, 188th overall, 1,071. So for joining a bit late, Skylar, that's a pretty good result.
And I'm pleased he wasn't there all season, because I would have finished one step further down.
Probably you and I both.
Yes, it's looking that way, isn't it?
Yep, and with that, I think that's the end of the show. It's obviously, as we said, the end of Grand Prix racing for the year. Of course, as I mentioned at the top of the show, there is Sev this weekend. All of those should be up on YouTube to watch as well if you're bored in the off-season. And then we do also have Macau coming up as well. Macau's going on, so hopefully we'll be able to bring some coverage from that one. Hopefully we'll be able to catch it on TV.
The race is next Saturday,
I believe so, yes. And yeah, what a season. You know, best season ever, certainly.
Was it next Saturday or this Saturday? It's not tomorrow, is it? Not this Saturday coming. It could be, actually.
It could be. They've had first qualifying.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's this Saturday. My apologies. So we'll have that next week on the show.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, you know, as I was saying, best season ever, certainly in 2016. Hopefully 2017 will be even better. Testing, absolutely incredible. What a wonderful time to be watching motorcycle racing. Has there ever been a better time to be watching motorcycle racing? I honestly don't know.
No, I think not. And looking forward to 2017, which could be the best this season ever.
He is hoping. I'm going to say a big goodbye to everybody in Motopod land. We will be back most likely next week. I would imagine almost certainly next week, obviously, with, as we said, World Superbike testing, Moto2 testing, Moto3 testing, Macau, and Sev. So we do have a decent little show there for you next week, and then we'll be well and truly into the off-season, probably a week off, then some Super Prestigio coverage. Then, you know, we'll start probably doing a show every second week or so. Motopod, yep, at motopodcast.com. Keep those off-season ideas coming in. We will start collecting them and coming up with a plan. And thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you very much indeed. Enjoy your week. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye.